Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
The Gambia is giddy. Comoros are out and Roy rides again. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Tuesday, the 25th of January. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I've got plenty of time to say I'm Vidushin Hantharaja.
And he squished it right into the end.
Yeah, a succinct Mason. Is this a new leaf?
Could be. I was actually thinking of trying to be like early for stuff as my New Year's resolution.
You were literally late today. You were literally late for work today. So where does that come from? I don't mind. I understand shit happens, but that's a bit rich.
Starting from now.
Yeah, exactly. You're saying that from this morning you've already learned your lesson.
I think it's an intention thing. You've got to set your intentions, haven't you? And then it's a growth mindset, Luke, is what it is.
Okay. It is the thought that counts, yeah.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you've got to believe that this is not a fixed thing.
Well, I don't need to believe you were late this morning. I saw it happen.
But you know what you know about growth mindset? You're all about the growth mindset, aren't you, Lee?
So I'm told, yeah.
What about you, Vish?
What would be the opposite of that?
Being like kind of fixed.
Yeah, shrink mindset.
Well, yeah, I'm a shrink mindset kind of guy. Well, someone as tall as me was in goal yesterday. So
yes!
Everything's coming up 5'7".
5'7", is it? I would say that's my height, but you know, we'll get on to that. Yeah, we do need to get to the games. Two great ones from the AFCON, but before we talk about them, very sadly, we need to talk about the fact that there seems to have been some loss of life outside the game between Cameroon and Comoros. It's being reported that around eight, well, certainly eight fans and possibly more have lost their lives. in what's been called a stampede as thousands of people tried to get access to the stadium. So many people injured as well. The governor of Cameroon's central region says there may be more casualties. So really, really sad news to hear out of what's been fairly, you know, joyful tournament so far. And that's all that's known at the moment.
Yeah, it's absolutely tragic, awful to see. And condolences to, and commiserations, of course, sympathy to the family and friends of the people who've lost their lives. And, you know, it is important to mention at this point when we're recording, quite a difficult time for us to record, and it's still a developing situation. So we can't go into too much detail because the last thing we need is any misreporting on this. But yeah, really, really sad, really tragic.
Yeah, very sad indeed. For now, all we can do is talk about the football and talk about the games that we watched last night. So yeah, if it's all right with you guys, we'll talk about this.
Let's
Cameroon against Comoros. In the end, the hosts won 2-1. But bloody hell, Comoros, with their number three in goal, who is, as Vish rightly points out, 5'7". They really
And you are out. Not 5'7", by the way. Let's just get that. Get that sorted.
You're a working 5'7", though.
I'm not working.
He's a growth mindset, 5'7".
No.
Fish is 27, the same way the plumber around your house is going to be another 20 minutes. it's like, it's an estimate, isn't it? And Vish, let me just put a five.
Actually, I got measured the other day and I was 5'7".
Vish very much does not have his tools in the van.
Look.
But do you think it was
either way,
him?
It proves that this, you know, you could be a goalkeeper if you wanted to. So this is their left back, Chaka Alhadher. Yeah. He played in goal. He made some great saves. And let's not forget as well, they played, what would it have been? 83 minutes.
Yeah.
With 10 men. Oh my God. Their captain, Nadim Abdou, got sent off after 7 minutes.
So it's amazing that Comoros got to this stage. And it's a really interesting story. And I think we've covered it on the show before now, so we don't do that again. But it's a shame that the circumstances dictated that they had to play the game in this manner.
Yes.
I wonder if, because you've mentioned 5'7", I wonder, because clearly they've gone through some kind of process to select.
Yeah, their
they've
coach
not just
said,
who fancies it?
They said, their coach said, oh, in training we found someone who can play as a goalkeeper.
But do you think they factor this height in?
Basically what it sounded...
Sorry, Fish, to cut in, but if you had a guy standing, he was 7 out of 10 at goalkeeping,
yeah,
would you take a 6 out of 10 who was 6'2", is what I'm saying?
Well, because you know what they say, I'm sure I've said this before, but I haven't been totally precise with the stats. It's something like 10% of the world's 7'2" people that exist are playing in the NBA. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So that's actually, a really good fact.
So actually, I need to check the percentage, but it's around 10%.
You're on the round, we don't check the percentages.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, good point.
Another show tonight. People forget about it.
Yeah, Ryan. So does that answer your question to some degree? You probably would be better off picking the 6 out of 10 taller guy. Oh, Vish, what was your point?
I don't think it answers this question. I think you just wanted to take that,
factor.
Does that not answer the question, though? Because it can't be... People are taking advantage of the height of those guys.
Yes, height is more important than you otherwise might think based on that stat. So it kind of does half answer it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of. But the number of people who are above, 6'6", are so much smaller than the people below 6'6". And there'll be more people in football...
I think we're getting bogged down.
We are getting a little bit bogged down.
You were going to say something earlier before I interrupted you.
What I will say is that in picking Alhadher, they were essentially picking someone from outside their starting 11 because they didn't want to disrupt the outfield 10.
Fine, that makes sense. The pool was smaller.
Yeah. And I was talking to my partner about this, who plays football, and she was like, it'd be really interesting to see a couple of things, like command of box, which is a big thing, and also bravery.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing that goalkeepers just naturally do is they'll just throw themselves at the feet of a striker.
Yes. Yeah.
I think he failed on the second goal where he kind of momentarily thought he was still playing defensive, put his hands behind his back.
Yes,
and stayed on his line. Which I'm not. And the thing is, I'm not criticising him because really, for him doing this in a I presume
major
what is a massive
tournament,
biggest incredible
game of Comoros's football team's career,
an occasion of immense national
history.
Pride. Yeah,
yeah,
of course. So he's almost a free pass for him if he's not going to start, right? But and I thought he swept quite well on occasion.
Well,
as well.
He did, yeah. He
but
came
that,
out.
That showed the big gap between professional keeper and goalkeeping enthusiast.
I think
Pep
Guardiola enjoyed it personally, but I like the way how high he was pushing up as well.
Brilliant.
He was great with his feet.
The double save.
That's the least you expect.
How good was the double save?
Not very good.
No, exactly. But that made it even better.
Yeah. The great thing about the double, people could say on paper that's a double save, right? But the second save was precipitated because the first save was so poor.
Yes. Yeah.
He threw himself after the first goal, the first Cameroon goal. But again, it was the most indicative of the kind of professional versus amateur vibe, because he did everything right, kind of, but he just didn't have the big hand.
Yeah, it was
technique.
It was almost like a kind of a caricature of a goalkeeper. You can see what he's trying to do.
Yeah,
a lot of the stuff was greatly exaggerated and not at all in the textbook.
Do you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember the disastrous Cats film?
Yes.
Humans had to act like cats.
Yeah.
It looked a little bit like that.
I can see what you mean. Yeah.
You know, slightly off-putting, a bit weird, a little bit sexy, not going to lie. A lot to be taken from that. Also love the fact that he had to duct tape his number to the back of his shirt.
I guess he didn't have to do that, did he? I assume that was him just making a sort of...
Well, no, he had, because it's certainly a major tournament, isn't it? The fact that you have your designated squad number that...
And you can't...
You know,
yeah. That's what you mean.
So they couldn't reprint.
I also would like to just go back to something Kate mentioned about the sending off. I thought that was a little bit harsh, and the fact that Comoros were able to stay in the game for so long and actually give Cameroon something to think
so
about.
Oh, so impressive!
Was great, and you know, Andre Onana had to make more saves.
Yeah.
Than the Comoros goalkeeper, which tells its own story, really.
Lots of people think he's one of the top goalkeepers in the world, right?
No, I think he is.
And given that really set the tone, didn't it?
There was a great moment right at the start where Onana seemed to have spent so much time looking at the opposite goalkeeper that he completely forgot how to goalkeep.
Yes, he made a terrible save.
Yeah, really.
And had to be rescued by one of his defenders. Yeah. And guys, look, I know we're focusing on Comoros, but we will talk more about Cameroon as they are still in the tournament. But what about that goal? Youssef N'Changma, what a goal. What a way to go out. I'm so happy that they scored.
That was, I'm trying to choose my words carefully here. That was certainly one of the best free kicks I've ever seen.
Amazing.
I can't immediately think of a goal, a free kick that was definitely better than that. And that's the barometer, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I've always had this theory that from free kicks around that far out, actually, you're better off without a wall, because if the goalkeeper can have
an unhinged view,
you can react better. I still believe that, because I think that was the exception to the rule, because you have to hit it that perfectly to get it in. Because if you see the angle from behind the ball, it's right in the corner.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where it goes out of the frame of the goal. So Onana's basically got to dive and think, well, and hope it's either going over, but if it's coming down, it needs to be that little bit closer to me. Otherwise, yeah, I'm fucked. And it was, yeah, perfect. I spent all night watching that yesterday after the game.
I think if you watch...
And we encourage you to do the same at home.
Yeah, that's not the most boring way you spent a night, I'm sure.
No.
But it was incredible. And I think I'm pleased that they got something to go away from the tournament to remember them by in a knockout stage of a tournament, the first tournament they've ever qualified for.
Wow.
They've been particularly hard but done by, not just by the COVID rules, because that's just how they are, but also with that refereeing decision, possibly fairly, possibly unfairly, I don't know. But the fact that they were able to stay in the game for so long against such a good team and against the host as well was incredible.
Well, you say that the COVID rules are just how they are. I mean, they had changed mid-tournament, and the fact is their goalkeeper as well had tested negative the day before. So it's like double their real goalkeeper, I mean. No disrespect to the number three, obviously.
Yeah. But maybe he decides that he wants to be a goalkeeper now. You never know.
Oh.
Got a little taste of the biscuit. I mean, I wouldn't recommend him doing that, by the way, but, you know.
I feel like you're rowing back on something positive.
No, I'm sure he's a great left back.
Comoros, 7 shots on target. So, yeah, it wasn't like they were just trying to all sit in the box and hope for the best. A good news story that continues to play out. The Gambia did make it through. They won 1-0 against Guinea. They are the lowest ranked team in the tournament. Is a sensational end to this one. Guinea hit the post twice in the space of 5 seconds, and there was an incredible save from Boubacar Gaye.
Oh yeah, that was probably the save of the tournament from what I've seen. That was absolutely incredible. That was unbelievable, that save. I couldn't believe he'd saved it. And when a goalkeeper saves something, a shot in that dramatic way, and it then hits the frame of the goal, it looks a lot better.
Yes.
Because it automatically looks like, Jesus, that was really hard. I only just saved that. Which probably helped, but it was... Yeah, this was a good game as well. I'm really pleased with the Gambia. Crazy that they've got as far as they have. They're ranked 150th in the world.
I know, yeah. I really didn't see this coming. Like, you know, Comoros, because of, I suppose, the size of them, you don't really... I know that obviously they've got quite a few players based in France who play in the French leagues there, and you think, okay, maybe they'll put something together. But I don't really get how this is playing out. The fact that Gambia are in the quarterfinals now. Even yesterday, they were properly up against it. And yeah. had Conte not been... Well, I mean, obviously got sent off quite late on, but it really felt like whatever indiscipline there was there, Guinea couldn't quite make heads or tails of how they wanted to beat Gambia. Mm. And they didn't. And also Barrow's goal was like a great bit of strength as well to kind of take the touch in the box and then beef off two players before finishing. All over that.
Beef them off.
We need more of that. Yeah. And let's not forget that Gambia almost went out to Djibouti on penalties in preliminary qualifying back in 2019.
Blimey. What a journey. That's a definition of a journey. That's Lord of the Rings stuff. That's the Fellowship of the Africa Cup of Nations.
Get the big eagle in. Take you all the way.
Take you there, exactly.
One of my mates is living out in the Gambia at the moment. I'm trying to get her to... She says it's all going off like with joy. Everyone's just like partying all the time at the moment. But I'm trying to get her to send some photos. But if you're listening from the Gambia, bloody send them in.
I used to live with someone in halls of residence at uni from the Gambia. Prince Stuart. Yeah.
Well, get him on.
He'd be loving life. I've spoken to him for years. I'm sure he'd be loving life.
All right. So, yeah, some tasty matchups in the next round. The Gambia now go on to play Cameroon in the quarterfinals. Let's get to Roy the Boy, who's back in the big time, potentially. Watford have sacked Claudio Ranieri. We saw it coming, not because we're clairvoyant, but because Watford like to sack their managers. Claudio Ranieri has gone after just over 3 months in charge. It's a quite extraordinary record, this, Fish. He picked up 7 points in his 13 games, the two wins, if you remember, the 4-1 against Manchester United. That's not why I've come to you.
That's a flattering in Man United.
And the 5-2 against Everton.
Yeah.
What the hell? And a draw with Newcastle United.
So the teams that they beat, both their managers...
Then eventually went.
Yeah.
Well.
So it's almost like there's like.
So it's like Watford do this.
Yeah. It's
to
like
everybody.
But they have this like radioactive infection that any team they best has to get rid of their manager.
But it's not the greatest like attribute for a manager though, is it? Like, my wins are like fucking Halley's Comet. Like, they're amazing and really spectacular, but they come along once every 35 years.
And we happen to catch teams at their lowest ebb.
Yeah.
I don't know if this puts it into some context for you, but Watford have played 104 league matches under. How many league coaches?
It's something like, it's either 12 or 15.
Oh, shit. No, it's not as many as that.
Oh,
7.
Oh, okay, right.
Oh, that's boring. Yeah. Your answer's much better.
No, the stat I had was that when they fired Sean Dyche, since then, Sean Dyche has had the same job and they've been through, I think, either 12 or 15.
Yeah, that was 2012.
I thought 104 league matches under 7 different coaches sounded like loads.
No, I've undermined you there. That is still a very...
Yeah.
I mean the whole point about Watford, to be semi-serious for a moment, is that I understand that the way they like to do things is they're trying to create a stable environment for which a coach can slot in and slot out as and when they see fit, right? So I think the helpful context to provide is a couple of weeks ago, when Benitez moved on from Everton, we were talking about the shortfalls in building an entire club around a manager, particularly today, because managers only last however long they last. And then if Benitez has been given the responsibility to make all these really big decisions, and then he goes, you're kind of left with a load of players and a load of managers with no real identity.
Yeah.
And that's been a big part of Everton's problem. Now, the other end of the scale is what Watford are trying to do, right? Where they have a coach, as I say, can just slot in. The whole environment is set up for any coach to come in and be successful. And, I mean, if you look at the size of club of Watford, it's definitely possible to make an argument that has worked.
In the past.
Yeah, I just don't know if it's still working now. And it's no coincidence, for example, their most impressive season they had in the Premier League, where they got to the FA Cup final. They
finished 10th.
I think it was 11th.
Oh, 11th.
Maybe.
Sorry, I'm trying to boost them up.
There's already around there.
I feel better this morning.
That's all right. They won't mind that. Is because they had a really strong spine, right? So they had like Deeney and Kapu and all those kind of players. And they just don't have that now. So I think all those things are in the mix. Mm. I wonder what it's going to mean when Roy the Boy comes in, because there can be miracles if you believe, Kate. So I like that you're announcing this news before it's officially happened. Will Roy get them going again? I like to think of a 74-year-old Roy Hodgson managing the Premier League, and that's all I've got to say on it.
Me too. Taking over from the 70-year-old Claudio Ranieri.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
For all the faults, at least they're not ageist. Mm.
Yeah, that's true. Well done them.
Have you got an issue with what I said, though? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I mean, because that's how they're going about things. I don't have any issue with that per se. I think that, you know, my reasons for dismissing what they're doing in some ways, because I feel like it always undermines the new manager coming in. Mm. But essentially, what from my point of view, what Watford are trying to do is game a system that isn't necessarily, well, hasn't helped many a team, and we're going to go in to talk about one of them in the second half. But they've almost tried to make themselves as a vessel for modern football. And by that, I mean, one thing, I suppose, if you can't necessarily build a team through your own, I suppose, not ambition, but I suppose through your own focus, then what you can be is a vessel for Premier League football, for, you know, eyeballs, for all that money, and get, well, basically attract the best players that you can on the guys that you help us out for two seasons, you can go anywhere else.
Right.
And I wonder if that is more conducive to having what you're saying is these managers dropping in and out and thinking, can you work with these two? No, fuck off then. You know, yeah. And we'll get someone else in who can. Because if you look at a lot of their players, you know, I'm amazed they've kept hold of Sarr for as long as they have. Dennis is going to be the next one, you know, who's going to be picked up. You see a lot of their other players as well who've either been caught on the way down or coming up with them on the way up. And I do, there's, you know, I know there's not much logic to it.
You're thinking of Norwich and people like that,
aren't you? No, I'm not thinking of Norwich. I'm thinking of basically, they're basically, so Pete referred to them yesterday as freelance managers, yeah?
Yeah.
Watford are basically like WeWork, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's what you mean.
Come and use this workspace, do what you want and leave, yeah.
But you both seem to be saying that this is almost like a deliberate idea. And definitely I think of Watford, they have been in the past, and the way they've presented themselves is to say, like, we're a kind of money ball situation. We've managed to outperform our resources and our rank and all that sort of thing. But the reality is this new, having a million new managers and them all changing in the middle of the season is a new thing, because back in 2017, their CEO said, I think it's a testament to all parties at the football club and our evaluation process. So emphasising that we're like thinking about things carefully. We don't like making knee-jerk reactions or decisions because they are invariably wrong. And he goes on to talk about how it's stupid to change managers just because of one bad result.
Because they didn't do it during the season traditionally.
Sure, they tried to. Yes, certainly they're trying to like have people fit into a system. I completely agree with you. But I think, unfortunately, it seems as though the guys in charge have lost sight of the approach they took because, if Roy Hodgson comes in, we know he can, we know he can do a very good job with a number of Premier League sides.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like it's kind of a structured, carefully considered, especially given that they were backing Ranieri.
Yeah.
Well, that's the
start of thing. January.
But the Ranieri thing is the key point here, I think, because for all you're saying there, which I completely accept, that seems to me then ultimately what we're talking about is it coming down to the quality of the coach they pick, right? They have to get the right appointment or they're not going to sustain it. So the issue is, if you look at Ranieri, I know he's very popular here in England, and you know, and rightly so, this is a manager probably who's showing some flickers of what is diminishing power. So second season at Leicester is disastrous. Before that, I know he had the season in Leicester, to say the least, which is amazing. Before that, at Greece, he was a disaster. You know, at Fulham, he was an absolute disaster. Yeah. He did a pretty good job at Sampdoria, rescuing them from relegation. I don't think it worked out for them at Roma, from what I can remember. And now you've got Watford. This isn't a manager, despite everything he achieved 7 years ago, whatever it was. This isn't a manager who's consistently doing a good job.
And
so I think
he's definitely not consistent.
No,
yeah.
And by that, so by nature of that, it's going to be a gamble if you're operating that model and then hiring someone like Ranieri. You don't really know what you're going to get.
It's also, but people know now, don't they? They know what's going on. They're not going to be like, oh yes, please.
Yeah. Unless you're like,
unless you want the payoff. Unless you want the payoff.
Exactly.
Maybe you are.
They might still be polite. Yeah. They might say please. You're very energetic with your please then.
but it feels like they're just constantly pressing reset. You know. And that's fine, but you're going to be in a situation where you're just not going to get the caliber of manager that you want. Even if you're a young manager, you wouldn't dare touch that, would you?
Also, look at the type of football they're playing. What type of football do they play?
Yeah, this is the other thing as well. It's really interesting.
You don't know what type of football they play, and all you know is you see mad stats that they haven't kept a clean sheet for about 16 years. Like, and you can't. Well, no matter what type of football you want to play, you can't be successful if you can see goals every single game, literally.
But they've
that's
got
part of it.
But almost to counter that lack of identity, they've got some very exciting players. You know, we named a few of them before, but even someone like Imran Luzer, who's a quality little operator in midfield, he's someone who I don't really think other promoted side, certainly other sides battling relegation, would think to buy. But they're like, it's good at distributing to ball, the ball to our fly wingers. So yeah, why don't we just get him in? It's whoever comes in, and this will be the really interesting thing with Roy, because by the end of his tenure at Palace, he got so caught up in wanting them to stay above water that the football was pretty bland.
But people knew he was leaving as well.
Yeah, but it was only that last season where they signed Eze and they had a couple of other players where it seemed like they were moving to a more expansive style of football, which is why they needed to move on from him. But it'd be interesting to see what he makes of this squad, because there were a lot of very talented footballers in that squad. I don't know that there are a lot of willing grafters.
More of this tomorrow, presumably, yeah. Or we can laugh at our failed attempt to predict the future.
With our three willing grafters, whoever they are on tomorrow. You, isn't it?
Yeah, it's me, Brassel, and Marcus.
There we go. Three grafters.
They love the graft.
They love
Roy. A rest. Have a rest, everybody, and listen to these.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Clash of the Titles is the podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head in a fight to the death as we decide which film does it better. And for the whole of January and February, we're taking film suggestions from you, our listeners.
But he said to me, I was putting on, and because we've done the social network, and he's like, why are you doing all these good films? And I said, oh, well, you know. And then I had to admit that other people pick them, not us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Join me, Alex Zane, with Chris Tilley and Vicky Crompton every Monday and Thursday. Search Clash of the Titles wherever you get your pods.
If you're asking me whether Harry the Horny, who I presume is the mascot, should dive in that way, I think it's disgraceful.
Sorry, Harry the Hornet, who I presume is the mascot. He absolutely fucking is the mascot.
Why else would he be there, Roy? Yeah. Lost on the way to fucking Chessington World of Adventures.
Just to be clear, that's not some leaked audio from the new appointment of Roy Hodgson.
Yeah. Harry the Hornet, the guy playing the Harry Hornet's thinking, well, I'm for the chop then. Yeah.
That was from his time as Crystal Palace manager. Welcome back to the Football Ramble with me, Vish and Luke, in your ears today. Now it's time for these.
Shoutoutfootballramble.com.
Did you get that?
Yeah. That's from the that'll come from the box set retrospective of all Peach musical work. The raw, you know, sometimes when you see those YouTube videos where people have isolated like Otis Redding's vocal,
yeah,
sitting on the dock of the band, you can go, it's absolutely amazing. It's like that.
It is like that.
But
more terrifying.
Can we do a Beatles documentary of Pete and that jingle?
Yeah, 9 hours, Peter Jackson. We've got an email here from Nick. And yeah, for those of you of a sensitive disposition, you might not want to consider yourself warned. I don't know what Nick's medical credentials are as well, so I should probably say that for all sorts of sensible reasons. But Nick says, in all the years I've been listening to your magnificent shows, I wondered what expertise I might one day be able to contribute, and then came today's earwax debate. This was yesterday on the show.
If you missed out.
Yeah, you're partly responsible for that, Mason, by the way. Don't try and distance yourself.
Yeah, you're in your watch.
I actually need to release a statement about that. But anyway, carry on.
Add your earwax all over it. In a previous life, one of my attempts to find a viable career resulted in a job repairing hearing aids. Ah. There we go. Spoiler alert, 99% of the issues involved something being clogged with wax or some other kind of grim residue.
What other residues could come from there?
It doesn't specify. And I don't want to think about it. Many of them are moulded in the same way as the kind of earpieces worn by media folk and referees.
Ah.
However, it's worth noting that earwax is highly antibacterial, so actually it's probably the cleanest and most wholesome of your various bodily deposits you could ingest. Also, sorry to Pete, but as a desensitised as I became to the sight of waxy clog... At no point have I ever felt the urge to chow down on my own. Perhaps I just lack the most basic level of human curiosity, but I'm betting I'm in the majority.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, you are in the majority, surely. Yeah. I suppose it's the likelihood. On Twitter, it seemed as though people were constantly eating their earwax. But I guess maybe if it's the less mainstream view, maybe you'd feel more motivated to contribute that, because finally it was a chance to get out in the open.
I think
that's just in your right-wing echo chamber. I didn't see any of that.
Yeah. Pete has announced to me in the past that he used to get told off as a kid for continually sneaking into the kitchen and eating frozen sausages from the freezer. So,
Jesus Christ.
And it may well be worth, for vital context, pointing out that he suffers from quite a lot of stomach problems as an adult. I don't know if they're related. It's not for me to say. I'm not a medical professional, but those facts remain.
Frozen sausages.
Defrosting his stomach.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, shirtfootballramble.com, as you've heard 9 million times already today, is the place to email in.
Thanks for reiterating that one. And don't forget also... You guys, get in your dilemmas or questions for Pep Talks tomorrow on the show. You can also tweet us at Football Ramble. Please, not about eating raw meat.
No.
I can't take it anymore. We want to talk to you now about Derby County, because they have been having a tough old time. And yesterday, the EFL announced that they are going to have a meeting to discuss the future of Derby County, but it has been postponed because administrators are making additional progress. So that sounds semi-promising. The issue, there's a number of issues in this whole situation, which include the fact that a couple of other clubs who were relegated as what they see... what seems to be, although obviously this is being looked into by much higher powers and much greater intellects than my own, hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Middlesbrough and Wickham, you know, in one case, have tried to sue the EFL for the fact that they were effectively relegated, when it then subsequently turns out that Derby County were kind of mismanaging their finances. The situation now is, it looks as though Mel Morris, the owner, is effectively kind of run out of money, and they're now vastly in debt. So, or run out of money that he wants to put into a football club. And now, as a result, anyone who's going to take over the club is going to have to cancel out a debt of £60 million, amongst all of these other things. So it's been really turbulent and difficult times. We talked about it in the context of people, of them being docked points, of course, and what a good job Wayne Rooney is doing. But we just wanted to talk a bit more about it, because obviously we have lots of listeners who support Derby County, and it's just a really, really terrible time for you guys.
It also speaks to a wider discussion that is vital to have around how football is administered in this country, right? So, the thing you mentioned there about the Middlesbrough and Wickham situation, particularly as pertaining to Wickham, as far as I understand it, and I may be wrong, it won't be the first time I've been wrong, for example, the points penalty for something they've effectively done in the season before is put on the season after. And Wickham was saying, well, hang on a minute. You know, the offence was committed then. You're getting punished now. As a result, we've been relegated. Middlesbrough have a slightly different issue, but around the playoffs and stuff like that. Ultimately, it comes down to having to sort out a load of difficult situations because it's not been set out in the first instance properly, and the relevant controls aren't in place to stop this kind of thing happening. Mm. You know, that's 60-odd million... that's owed, I think it's 20-odd million of it's owed to the revenue, owed to HMRC. And that's changed because the laws have changed. I think they changed...
In 2020 because of the pandemic.
Where they become a preferred creditor, whereas before they would only receive something like 25% of the debt. So the whole thing has been mismanaged from start to finish. What's really important here, and I do speak from a little bit of experience because the team I support went through this, is that football clubs used to be, and to an extent they still are, focal points of communities, right? This is a football club which is very important to many, many people, and it affects their lives in a big way. It's easy for us to be in a studio talking about football as a job or out in press boxes or whatever it may be. This is a really important part of the community in Derby, and everyone has a responsibility to try and work out how best to move forward. And what needs to happen is the authorities that are responsible, whether it be the Football League or the FA or whoever, have to show more leadership and put more control and checks and balances in place to stop this stuff happening, because it's happening too often. If you look at the stats of how many Football League clubs, for example, are in some kind of financial difficulty and relying on what I would call kind of non-traditional, unorthodox methods of continuing to exist, even before COVID, it's far higher than it should be. So I hope we don't keep seeing these isolated incidents of clubs being mismanaged and it not being linked together to a wider point about how football is run in this country. And I want to make that point clear because it is about Derby County. We sympathise with their fans. That's obviously first and foremost. But actually, it's also about it speaks to a wider issue and something that we shouldn't ignore in our role as making a football show.
Yeah, I think the thing that always strikes me with this kind of stuff is that people saw it coming, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yes.
When Mel Morris sold the ground, you know, it was done as this way to, obviously as a way to raise money, but it was done with a very clearly behind the scenes and certainly from people in the know that he was running out of money that he was willing to put in, but also this was a way of them to, you know, keep their ambitions going, which is part of, falls partly into the case with that Middlesbrough are putting against Derby County now. For example, they lost out on signing Martin Waghorn, I think it was.
Yes, this is exactly it.
A few seasons ago, and it was off the back of the profit that they made from selling the ground, which they spent, I think, 5 or 6 million on Waghorn signing.
And they were registered as being in profit that season for the first time in multiple seasons, but it doesn't really mean
it doesn't
that.
Correlate. Yeah. And they were, obviously that was part of the points deduction they received because of that finagling of... you know, of how it looked on the...
Sorry, finagling.
Yeah.
I love it. Is it technical? But,
I think it is a little bit.
The reason you further contextualise this is that the decision that's been made by people in charge at Derby County during that time have clearly made a calculation that the Premier League is some kind of mad promised land.
Yes.
That if they could just get there, everything will be fine. It's essentially...
The incentives are wrong, yeah.
It's a gigantic low percentage gamble, a casino-style gamble, and if it pays off... You're basically golden. You're not only going to be able to be a legend in that town, or city, whatever. You're going to also be able to presumably pay yourself a huge king's ransom as a reward for doing so. And it's so imbalanced. The gap between the Premier League and everyone else is now so big that you can't you can't give people diminished responsibility because they're individuals making their own decisions. But it's almost like the situation is contributing to some pretty poor decisions. And that's further evidence that football is broken. It's just completely broken.
And the only reason we see this now is because Derby didn't get promoted in 2018-19 when they made the playoffs.
Correct.
Exactly. Had they been promoted, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, and it's the idea that there are many, many other clubs in that division right now doing similar-ish things, or so, like maybe not even willingly, but just throwing all their eggs in the Premier League basket and potentially going to be in a situation where, 2 years down the line, we'll be having this conversation again in this exact setting about the exact same thing.
And what it looks like is it's the logical thing to do, unfortunately, because as you rightly say, 2018-19.
Yeah, but there is the one thing I've noticed with this, and there's a lot of, people have tweeted us on the Ramble about it to retweet various things. We're obviously talking about it now. There's obviously a lot of talk about the football family this and the football family that. The interesting thing I see now, and maybe it's because of the involvement of Wycombe Wanderers in their relegation last year and Middlesbrough in the case that Steve Gibson is bringing against Derby County, is that it feels a little bit more tribal than it used to. If you notice, and I know Twitter isn't a great measure of anything, but I think if you notice, a lot of the stories about Derby County now are full of fans of other Championship clubs who've either been through it before or might have thought that they were on the wrong end of this inflated Derby County that they played maybe a couple of years ago. Is a lot of people saying, you know what, they got themselves into this mess. And I don't think it's necessarily something that the club needs to take responsibility of. But the idea that someone like Mel Morris can, you know, come out and be so public about how upset he is about this, that, and the other, and how he's doing his best for the club, and I think there is a sinister element to this that I think should be taken with a lot of the empathy and sympathy that Derby County and Derby County fans especially rightly deserve.
Well, Fish, I mean, that thing you're talking about with Mel Morris, that happened during the Portsmouth example as well with Peter Story, who was basically in charge of the club and everything happened while he was working there. And yet he was basically just spinning and PRing yeah. over and over again to the point where the fans were like singing his name and stuff, not really fully gripping the situations. That kind of aspect has been going on a while. I think to end on a little bit of better news, the Rams Trust have done an amazing job. And what you do see is you see the best of fans in this situation. Yeah. You see how powerful they can be, how passionate they are, and how really, yeah, just incredible they are to raise awareness, to force pressure on decision makers, to raise money, to do campaigns, all the rest of it. So that's obviously a small silver lining to the cloud. But the other one is that Derby is a club that there's never going to be a shortage of interest in people wanting to take the club over. And we have seen consistent talk that there are candidates to do so. They could, as you said, Kate, they're going to have to take on board a pretty big debt. But what I'd like to see happen, and I don't believe this currently happens, is the Football League and the FA, or whoever is specifically tasked with overseeing this, needs to tell the football community more broadly what measures they're going to take to establish and to ensure that whoever takes over the club next and what their business plan is to maintain a sustainable model. Yeah. Because it's no good if, for example, Mike Ashley comes in, who's a multi-billionaire, and he says, well, I'm a billionaire, so it's fine.
So what?
Well, yeah, it's fine, Mike, until it's not.
Yeah.
Right? But that's the point here. It's fine until it's not. Too many football clubs are propped up and owned by really wealthy individuals who are, by their nature, like human beings, can be capricious. And if they decide to leave, the whole house of cards comes crashing down. We have to move towards a sustainable model with these clubs, which sadly, again, when you turn that direction, has almost been rendered impossible by the way the Premier League behave. So there's no way out of this. But they need to show some leadership on it to ensure it doesn't keep happening.
I think the difficult thing, you guys have spoken so well about this, about the fact that, you know, this tribalism, people not perhaps fully grasping, because you feel like they have hurt you, perhaps, if you've been in their league and have had a negative impact from them. I think, and then now we're talking about the billionaires who run the clubs. It's not about them. It's about the community of Derby County. And I think because we are so spoilt, we have such a luxury in this country of these nearly hundreds of football clubs that were founded years and years ago. People have been playing football in these areas for years. If you think Derby yeah. County is about to celebrate their 138th birthday on the yeah. 5th of February, think about that. Like, the Statue of Liberty wasn't built
yeah, yeah.
138 years old. The Eiffel Tower wasn't up. There's a whole load of states in the United States of America that didn't even yeah. exist as states when Derby County was first.
And yet there are no protections in place.
Correct.
For these being...
This is heritage. And yeah. Of course, it's more heritage if you live in Derby and have supported it your whole life. But this is heritage of football generally, and I think that's why it's important.
The idea that people were going into the weekend's game wondering if that was going to be the last Brian Clough derby.
Yeah, so sad. Yeah, of course.
Tremendous, really.
And it's not the fans' fault. And you know what I would say about you talked about tribalism as well, just a very quick point. You know, fans are far too quick generally, rather than show a bit of solidarity and say, do you know what, we're all in the same situation here, there by the grace yeah. of God go us, are far too quick to sing songs mocking it and to talk about it and to laugh about it until it's them. And as soon as it's them, they feel like, well, why aren't we getting all the sympathy? Well, we're not getting the sympathy because the tribalism is so pronounced that actually you don't show any solidarity with rival clubs because you think it's funny because it's not happening to you. And that's got to be addressed as well. There needs to be some kind of... Because it's not really enough for fans of one particular club on an issue so big as this to just campaign on them set on their own. It needs to be a broader consensus. And I know lots of people like... You know, Football Supporters Association and stuff have done a lot of great work on it, but really, that level, there's no real power. So it has to be as broad a church as possible and as well supported as possible to further ensure that this thing doesn't happen again in the future.
Yeah, we wish Derby County fans all the best, but as Luke says and as Vish has touched on, oh God, I wish it would at some point be the catalyst for change.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, isn't it? Like, all I could think was, like, obviously we talk about it and ideally we want to offer some solutions. And in the end I'm like, transparency, or like, don't sell to billionaires. And it's just like all totally unworkable. But one last thing
before
we move on.
Don't stop believing people.
so impressed with the players. I know Wayne Rooney gets a lot of the plaudits, yeah, but the fact that they've just, you know, I know they'd lost on the weekend, but the win against Sheffield United before that, when they lost, I think, a couple of players an hour before and stuff like that.
Oh, my God, and saying goodbye to, like, real first-team stalwarts and people important in the dressing room and then just playing on and trying to figure it out. They can't afford to lose any more members of that first team if they're going to pull this off this great escape. Okay, it's nearly time to get out of here, but we just want to let you know that it's Tuesday. So Flo, Chloe and Rachel are back for a brand new episode of Upfront. They discuss the eventful weekend in the WSL, including those teams chasing the big guns at the top. And they're also going to look ahead to the FA Cup fourth round this weekend. If you head over to Football Ramble Presents, you can subscribe to that if you haven't already. On tomorrow's show, it is Marcus Vish is back, and you'll also have the pleasure of Andy Brassel in your ears.
Having Vish back on after that.
Did I go rogue when I mentioned who was going to be on tomorrow?
No,
I like it.
Easter egg, mate. Little Easter egg.
it was a proper big fucking Easter egg.
Yeah, exactly. Obvious Easter egg.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. You don't even have to stay tuned. You can just leave us and get involved with tomorrow's
Easter
episode.
Egg all over your face.
Nice to see the lads back tomorrow. Good. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, Luke, time to get out of here.
See you later.
Bye, Vish.
See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to today's Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network.
You went a bit Gollum there.
Yeah, I really did.
Shut up, Kate. Shut up, Kate.
Crumbs on his jacket.
Say goodbye to these stupid fat hobbits.
Silly podcast.
That's really good.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.